Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to High Velocity Radio, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Lee, we've had a busy day already.
Yes, we have. And I didn't know it was bring your kid to work day. What's
this
that about?
This is a lot of fun. Yeah, we don't have her mic'd up, but she's got the headphones on. She's been a tremendous asset today. My daughter, Kelly, home from school for the summer. We just spent the week together up in Mount Gretna, Pennsylvania, about 20 minutes outside of Hershey. So we're still a little hopped up on the chocolate and all that. And now we need a rest. Now we need a vacation. From our vacation.
So you're punishing her by having to follow you to work?
That's right. It's just my form of detention. No, I think we might have her help us out a little bit over the summer and see what we could do to get her involved in studio operations or some fancy title like that.
Cool.
Yeah. So this is her first indoctrination for the summer. And I can't think of a better way to get it going for her and all of our listeners. This is going to be a fantastic segment. I've known we were going to do this for a few weeks now, and I'm excited to let our folks know. Please join us and welcome into the broadcast with Thompson Legacy Law, Miss Michelle Thompson. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me.
Thompson Legacy Law, do you have a specialty?
I do. I practice estate and elder law.
And can you define some terms? Estate law, what is estate law?
Sure. Estate law is really dealing with when someone passes away, the dispersion and distribution of their assets. And elder law is really focused on seniors and making sure that they're getting the care that they need throughout the elder continuum.
And then does the elder law portion, does that involve their kids as well?
It does to some degree. A lot of my clients actually are technically their adult children. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes they're out of state and they need to make sure that their mom and dad are well cared for. Exactly.
Now, regarding estate law, is that you're dealing with the adult, the family member, the moms and dads to work on? Is that wills and trusts and things like that?
It is wills and trusts, powers of attorney, living wills. And really, for the estate planning, the age ranges run the gamut, whether it's new families with children or seniors as well.
It's usually some life event has occurred.
Exactly.
And is that a time when you either start at that and then, or you make some changes?
That's always a good time. And then some folks, you know, if they have children and they're going on a long trip and they're concerned about what happens if something were to happen to both parents, make sure that they've got guardians and the care for their minor children.
Now, what do you know what percentage of people have trust wills?
Personally, I'm biased.
Well,
I would
say 100%.
I would say not enough, but I think that in any ratios that I've seen, it's probably in the 25% to 30% ratio.
Have them?
Really? Is that true?
That cannot be good, because if you don't have those ducks in a row, there's a lot that cannot go your way, right?
Well, I think a lot of people are relying on fate and that they'll live forever to some degree, but you know, there are some steps that people can take to transfer assets outside of a will or mm-hmm. a trust. So, you know, oftentimes they rely on that and only that solely.
Now, this was just in the news, like with, wasn't it Prince died?
Mm-hmm.
And then he had no trust or will.
Apparently.
Wow. And then
it's hard to believe.
It's like a free-for-all, like every relative or
it is.
May or may not have known him is now coming forward.
So I think he'll probably end up having a lot of people who are claiming to be his mm-hmm. child. But in that instance, the state's going to dictate, if indeed he didn't have any plan, the state's going to dictate where his assets go.
So there is going to be a plan no matter what.
Well, it's not
control,
a good plan.
Right?
Right. You're left up to whatever the legislature's deemed as the intestate law when you die without a will.
So, but that's an important consideration. Like if people think that their legacy will be taken care of in a way that they wanted to, that's not necessarily so. If you're not proactive, then you're relying kind of on the state is going to make some decisions that your legacy may or may not like.
You're absolutely right. And in Georgia specifically, one thing that I think people are shocked about is when there are two spouses and they have children, more than two or more, the spouse only gets 1/3 of the estate and the children get 2/3. So that is often awkward when, you know, the
wow.
spouse is like, wow, how did I end up with less than the children? So that's when you don't have a will. That's what the law in Georgia dictates.
So your recommendation, I would imagine, is get a will or a trust sooner than later.
It is.
Least, right. Even just a basic one, just to get some just general things covered, right?
It is. And then also, I think it's very important for people to take a look at any type of bank accounts, life insurance, to make sure that A, you do have a named beneficiary, and B, that it's actually who you want. Because I've worked with a lot of people who haven't reviewed their beneficiaries in a long, long time, and it could be a previous spouse or something like that, you know, which is not ideal. So I always recommend an annual or every 2 years reviewing.
Some sort of an audit and to see what you have and where it's all going.
Right. I mean, because, you know, life does bring changes and folks, you may not want them to be the beneficiary that you did right. 2 years ago.
Well, and as important as all of this is, I would think that the documentation that governs what people are supposed to do and not do in certain medical situations, I mean, that's would have me as concerned as anything is, you know, what if I'm incapacitated and for how long and what's the disposition? Do you deal with those issues as well? Yeah.
That's a big facet of an estate plan. Really, I always recommend it. In addition to a will as part of my planning is I provide a living will, or in Georgia, it's called an advanced health care directive, where you can make certain choices regarding your medical care and appoint agents to serve as your mouthpiece when you're unable to speak for yourself. And then also another important piece to an estate plan in the case of incapacity is to have someone appointed as your financial agent so that they can transact your business when you're unable to. Like, for instance, to pay, you know, your mortgage, electric bills, things of that nature, just basic everyday financial transactions. And then, you know, the power of attorney does allow for more advanced actions for the agent if need be.
Now, can you walk us through what that conversation is like when you're talking to somebody who said, okay, I'm in, I want to do this. What does that first kind of consultation look like?
The consultation is really the most important thing is to find out what prompted them to call me because they were obviously have some sort of concern has arisen.
Right.
Most folks don't want to call an attorney. It's usually not a good situation. So
it's my birthday.
Right.
I get to call my attorney.
Right. So that's number one. And number two, to really just get a sense of what their intentions are. And for me and the experiences that I've had personally and what drove me to want to serve as an estate attorney is to make a good, thorough understanding of what the individual and the family's dynamics are. Are there, you know, children that have addiction issues? Is it a blended family where, you know, the spouse has come to the marriage with children from previous relationships? All of those things really drive ultimately what the final plan looks like. And it's important to do the legwork and to get a thorough understanding of my client's family situation.
So once you get their family situation, it's important also, I would imagine, to get an understanding of what outcome they desire, right? Like, because it may be something just straight up, okay, this is how we're going to split the money. But it could also encompass like, you know what, a part of my legacy is I want to start a foundation that donates money. So I got to portion off some of the money. There has to be a path for that. You got to kind of get the lay of the land, right?
Definitely. I mean, it's really inclusive to find out where do they want their assets to be dispersed, whether it's family members, loved ones, foundations, different entities. And also there's planning that's super important. And I work with a lot of clients who have special needs or supplemental need children,
right?
To make sure that
they're
moving forward,
care, right?
Even through adulthood, because you know, minors and some folks really are going to need lifelong care,
right?
And to make sure that they've got the resources and the assets protected to ensure that they're able to, you know, make their way through adulthood.
Now, how do you work with clients? Because I would imagine part of your role is almost like kind of a therapist in some ways, that like you go, because they want to be fair to the kids and they want it to be allocated in some sort of fair way, but it may not be like dollar-wise fair because some people have like addiction or special needs or something like that. And the other person's successful and they're doing okay. So then they might feel like they're shorting them because they're spending, like, how do you manage that?
So that is, you know, prevalent in nearly every client that I work
there's
with.
There's some weird.
There's something.
Right?
There's, you know, every family. And, you know, this is just the norm that there is something that we have to address in that way. And, you know, with that, I think the best way to address it for a family is to have a conversation, and so that everyone's aware. And, you know, some of my clients want all of their beneficiaries to come in so that at the signing, or just to give their beneficiaries an idea and an understanding
so
of what the rationale is.
Right.
Right. Right. And so, you know, because unfortunately, when we are dealing with an estate after the fact, after the, you know, testator has passed away, you can't ask questions anymore.
Right. There's no more kind of places to pivot or change or make adjustments.
Right. So it's really, you know, important for either the family to have this conversation, or you know, I'm happy. Oftentimes I'm the bearer of bad news, and,
right.
and I'm happy, you know, to serve in that way, to be sort of the buffer between the family members, so that I'm happy to have the difficult conversation for my clients.
Well, and they probably haven't had this conversation or had it the right way before sitting down with you. You must be an incredible facilitator. You would have to be.
Well,
right?
I mean, you do. And it, there's a lots of balls to juggle and to keep everyone happy. But most importantly, to focus on what my clients' concerns are, what their intentions are, and make sure not just is it reflected in our documents, too, but to ensure that their intentions are going to be executed when they're not here to oversee it.
And I bet you're asking questions that never even dawned on them. They hadn't even considered, because you've been there, you've done that, you've seen different things arise, and maybe you have to give them a little space to talk it out. They don't necessarily have the answer right then and there, right? You got to kind of massage it a little bit.
Right. Depending upon the family dynamic, there can be some difficult questions that are raised. And
like, what's an example?
Like, for instance, in a blended family, or even, you know, in some circumstances, just a traditional family that's had no previous relationships or marriages. But I have to ask, what do you want with your estate if your spouse survives you and remarries?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's a lot of blended families, and that's what prompted me to become an estate attorney, was the result of my mom's estate plan in a blended family. And it's very nuanced, it's delicate, and you have to really probe and ask difficult questions. But it doing the hard work up front will spare the family the heartache and the discomfort, and potentially fracturing the family from, you know, if you do the difficult work up front.
Do you ever have the instance where there might be a family-owned business, and then one of the kids works in the business and the other one doesn't, and then they got to talk about splitting it up? And
I've been doing this for 20 years. I've been helping Dad for 20 years, and now you want to come in and get your... you ever get that conversation?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a big part of my clients, is working with their succession plan in their business. And, you know, sometimes, depending upon the personality, sometimes it's best to... The plan states that the business is to be liquidated, so there's no conflict. But then other circumstances, depending upon, you know, who the family members are and what their temperament is, it could be something that could seamlessly transition and everybody gets along. It really, it's not one size fits all. And, you know, I know there's lots of other avenues where people can get plans, you know, but it really is not one size fits all. And it's predicated on understanding the dynamics and then being aware of where the friction points are and addressing those points.
But that's what, to your earlier point, that's why it's important to do this sooner than later and have it everybody involved and have this dialogue back and forth. Because if you don't, then all of a sudden, guess what? Somebody died. Now we're figuring it out on the fly, and I got a business to run or not run. I got to sell it. Now I'm going to sell it for pennies on the dollar if I know I'm going to liquidate it, because it's like kind of a fire sale. I got to get rid of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's always best to have a plan, have a well thought out plan, and to review that plan, you know, with some frequency. But relying on this, not having a plan, is really a menu and a recipe for the family to fall apart. Because even though the state dictates where things go, people have in their mind what they should get. And that doesn't necessarily jive with what the, you know, the testator or the owner's intentions were, or what the state dictates. So it can get messy.
What do you, can you share an example of like the state getting involved and then doing something that maybe the family didn't anticipate?
So there's the intestate statute here in Georgia, and most states have something akin to this, but in Georgia, it's really a hierarchy of the heirs. And so first it looks at, is the individual married? If so, then it's the surviving spouse gets everything. Then it looks at the number of children. If it's one spouse and one child, it's split. And then, like I mentioned earlier, if you have two or more children, the spouse gets a third. But if there is no spouse and no children, then the hierarchy continues down and it looks at, are there any surviving parents? If no parents, then siblings. So it keeps on going down the family tree. I think that there's some misunderstanding about the state doesn't just pluck it out of your right. estate. There are means for it to transfer, but it's typically not ideal. You know,
right.
It's best to have a plan on how you want your assets dispersed.
Now, we've been talking a lot about financially things, but there's also, you mentioned about medical things. Mm-hmm. I know when my mother died, I think it was like 8 years ago, she had a living will and she said, you know, under these circumstances, you know, A happens as opposed to B. But I can tell you, there's three kids and my father, we were still negotiating, you know, because that was still not a, there's a lot of gray area in that kind of chaos.
There is. And
but at least we were, I mean, we all got consensus and ended on the same page, but there was still, even with that document, there was still kind of interpretation.
Right. And I think that the Georgia legislature addressed that back in the, I think it was 2008 or 2010, where, because everyone had a different look of a living will. And right. it was hard for the, you know, medical staff to decipher what their interests and intentions were for themselves. So the Georgia legislature created a document, the Advanced Healthcare Directive. So everyone's working off the same uniform document. It's still a little hard to describe. And my clients, that's the document that everyone has the most difficulty with in trying to convey what it is they want and to make sure that that is, you know, what happened. So you have the ability to appoint an agent and successor agents to be your mouthpiece. And it's important that they understand what you want. And then it's important that you spell out if you do have any sort of, you know, interest or that you intend for certain things to happen. It gives you an opportunity to spell it out. But like you said, you know, it's hard to put on paper all the different scenarios, but right. that is the best solution that we have up to now. And it's a really effective solution. And just so long as, you know, some families don't necessarily agree with what the person, what their wishes are, but that's why it's on paper, so that when you're unable to speak for yourself, your wishes are followed.
Right. But the challenge, at least we had, was that your wishes when you're, like my mom was 75, might have been different in reality than if she was 95. You know, like heroic effort is kind of a gray area of, you know, is that worth the effort?
Right.
You know, if the person, especially if it's a young person at 40, you know, how much are you going to try to save this person as opposed to if they're 90?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it's true. I mean, it is a very difficult topic. Number one, nobody wants to talk about it.
Right.
And number two, no one wants to think about it, because although I can guide people, you know, in having a document reflect what they want, I can't make the decisions for them. And
right.
so that is, I'm telling you, the point of that, where we stick with nearly every client that I work with, no matter the age. I have a 93-year-old client that, you know, we're still wrestling with how does she want her wishes reflected. And mm-hmm. so it just depends. And, you know, one day I think people will come in and in our consultation, they'll be very clear that they just want to be made comfortable. Well, then when it comes time to executing the document, nope, they want heroic effort. So,
right.
and that could change. And so that really is the most fluid, hard to pin down thing for reflecting your intentions.
And that's why, like you said earlier, it's important to revisit this. It's not you do it one time and you're done.
Right. And nowadays, you know, that the Living Will or Advanced Healthcare Directive, it's gotten to where if you have any elective surgery, even I've heard some of my clients had said that they had oral surgery and the dentist wanted.
They asked about it.
Right. So,
wow.
you know, I think it's getting more and more prevalent. But under those circumstances, I'm not quite sure how it would apply. So I think it's more, you know, making sure that they've got their ducks in a row and their file covered. But, you know, it's really an end of life document. It's that simple. It's not, you know, if I have a living will or advanced healthcare directive, if I fall over right now, it's really not going to apply. The medical staff and whomever is in charge of my care is bound to make heroic efforts.
Right.
So you touched on this earlier in the conversation very briefly, that the genesis, at least for this focus, this specialty, was born of a personal experience. But can you walk us through the career path? Do you come out of law school with as a general practitioner, and then you evolve into a specialty? How does that piece work?
So I went to law school after a career as a firefighter. And
well, of course, that makes perfect sense.
That's natural.
That's the normal path, right?
My age and stature, at 40, it became unpleasant to be a firefighter anymore, even though it was the most amazing job, and I will always miss it. But I needed to do something a little more cerebral and less physical. And I had been involved in an environmental issue in my community, and so my intention was to go to be an environmental lawyer. But in my next to last semester of law school, my mom passed away suddenly. And that was devastating and, something that it's years back and I still, haven't recovered from that and I'm not sure I ever will. But that was the impetus and the subsequent fallout from her death. And even though my mom had taken enormous steps to make sure that she had a plan in place, unfortunately, she hired an attorney who didn't take any time to understand the fact that we were a blended family. There were lots of children that really were on the sidelines that were my stepfather's children that we really weren't involved in. And, naturally, when she passed away, suddenly all these people show up that really weren't a party to our family. And it got very, very complicated. And it's still going on years later. And so it was that experience that, in law school, I had my understanding of estate law was it had to be incredibly boring. It was just documents. But the documents are really just the result of taking the time to get to know folks and spending the time to understand the dynamics of their family, because it makes a difference. And when the nucleus of the family is gone, if you don't have, the plans in place and to try to address the friction points, it is a recipe for the family to fall apart.
To me, it's like a pay me now or pay me later.
Right.
You're going to pay.
Yep. And unfortunately, a lot of people, it's not just monetary. It's the family.
Emotionally, friction forever. I mean, you mentioned this the other day, the Hatfield and McCoy syndrome. you can really create a lot of friction and really destroy a family if this isn't really taken care of.
Right. And, that was the impetus, and that was my trajectory out of law school, was sort of the lessons by fire. And so now I'm super passionate about making sure that my clients do not have to go through what I did.
And it's not, and to your point, it's not about the documents. The documents are the documents. It's just really working through kind of the family relationships and managing those expectations and the outcomes, creating the outcomes that everybody wants as best you can.
Definitely. Ahead,
proactively rather than reactively.
Right. And, just having people think through certain scenarios that are plausible. And oftentimes, I bring up certain situations or scenarios that could very likely happen, but they just haven't considered. And so it's just taking the time to get to know them and their family dynamics.
Now, there's a million excuses not to do this. I mean, like you mentioned earlier, I don't want to talk about death. It's not going to happen to me. If I don't think about it, it's not going to happen. How much of time does it really take to nail this down? Like, are we talking an hour? Is this 2 hours? Is it a month? Like, how long does it take? Like, how much do I have to suffer in order to at least get something on paper so at least I'm in the ballpark of what I would like?
So, depending upon, what the client wants. And sometimes we just had a signing yesterday. I didn't meet them until they came to my office for the signing because they were traveling internationally and they had they were really motivated to get it done. And I was motivated to help them because, I saw they were concerned about their minor children not having appointed guardians. So, but typically if it's, nothing super complex that takes a number, of other steps. We have an initial consultation. I can either come to their home. Some folks don't travel well, or they can come into my office And it's about 45 minutes to an hour conversation. Initially, that gives me an idea of, are there other roads that we need to travel right. to investigate and get more information? But so that's an initial consultation. I do my work, the drafting of the documents, based on all the things that I've learned, and propose certain scenarios to them and see which fits them best. Then reflect that in the documents. We have a review meeting. We can do that depending upon how, you know, electronically sophisticated the client is. Again,
we can
have a go to meeting.
Right.
They can see my mm-hmm. screen. They can come into the office. It's whatever suits the client. Mm-hmm. And then I need about a week to reflect any sort of edits that we need to make. And then we have a signing, and without fail, everyone takes an enormous sigh of relief when it's done, because it's been something that's been weighing on their mind, and right. now they don't have to worry about it anymore.
Now, so the time part, you're talking an hour or two of actual right. time.
Yeah. It's not a lot.
Right.
It really isn't.
And it saves so much heartache and stress.
Yeah. So I want to talk, if we can, before we wrap, a little bit about the business side of things, the buying and selling of these services, I guess, is... So how does the sales and marketing side of this thing work? Are you out there like beating the bushes? Is it primarily built on relationships and referrals, or how does that piece work in your world?
I've done sort of both things, where you were doing relationship building, and I've also done sort of internet marketing. This, and I have found, and I don't know how it applies to other businesses, but for my business, is that this is based on relationships, all of it, whether it's the marketing piece or, you know, the actual client relationship. So I do a lot of meetings with referral partners. I have a deep understanding of their business. They understand who my clients are and who I best serve. And oddly, given that I have a large senior clientele, social media, Facebook specifically, is a big piece to marketing, because the demographics for Facebook aren't your teenagers anymore. It's your older citizens. And
my daughter and I are smiling because my mom, who we all call Snippy in my family, is like constantly on Facebook.
Right. 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 So, I mean, who would have thought it? But that's the case. So we do a lot of social media, and it's not marketing. It's really relationship building, so that we provide value. We provide resources. We provide information. And when they feel like they're ready to move forward, they have a trusted resource. And so we've built that relationship in a different avenue than traditionally, but yeah. it's effective for folks who are, you know, on the web. So it really is more about my referral partners, and a big piece of it is social media.
And so, like referral partners, there's other attorneys who do really great work in their own regard, but this is not their area. So they have you are their go-to person.
Yeah. Right. I think the legal community has finally gotten the clue that we can't be a professional in every area of the law. It's yeah. just like the medical profession now, their specialties. It's the same with the legal community. So my referral partners, a lot of them are attorneys, like, for instance, personal injury attorneys. When they have someone who's been catastrophically injured and they receive an award, we need to make sure that that is protected in trust and things of that nature. So in the legal community, we are learning what we're best at and focusing on that. And so that is a large part of my referral business, is from other attorneys.
Is that part of your networking? Is you network, and because you want to get the lay of the land, I want to work with personal injury attorneys that, you know, meet the same values right. that I have, right?
Exactly. And, you know, whether it's family law, because that always encompasses a lot of big changes, to, right. you know, life changes.
Like family, that would be like a divorce
right.
attorney.
Or exactly.
Like
and to make sure that, you know, they've structured their agreement that, you know, that there is life insurance in place and things of that nature. So
right.
we help each other. And then, like I said, we know what our strengths are and we work towards that.
Now, before we close, do you have any tips for somebody who's doing this for the first time?
So, I mean, outside of doing any, you know, estate plan, I just really recommend that people take the time to contact their bank, contact their, you know, brokerage account, look at their any retirement account, pensions, 401ks, to make sure that A, that there is a named beneficiary, because those do transfer outside of an estate if you have a beneficiary named, and make sure it's who you want. And then make sure that folks know how to find your assets, because I have worked with many, many spouses who've had to wait by the mailbox because they didn't know where the banking relationships were. They didn't know if they had life insurance. So just getting it, whether you use a spreadsheet or, you know, scrawl it on a piece of paper
or
a manila folder, just do something to where someone has access and has knowledge of where all of your things are.
Now, on your website, I know there's a lot of resources and you do events and things like that. What's the website?
It's thompsonlegacylaw.com.
And then they can go there. They can download a lot of these resources, kind of some basic checklist templates, things like that, and then read blog posts that, because you have a lot of education on the site that kind of explains why and kind of some of the how-tos. Right.
So one of the things that I always recommend is folks go to the website and download the Personal Planning Organizer, which is a great resource for what I was just mentioning about trying to get things in order. It's a, you know, very well spelled out tool that you can use to list, you know, where all of your assets are. And there's also many resources regarding elder law and ways to pay for long-term care and things like that. But in the next couple of weeks, I'm rolling out a video series of frequently asked questions because I think that people will take, you know, 30 to 40 seconds to watch a video instead of read a blog post. And there's a lot of information that I think it's important for people to know when they have questions. And so I want to provide it in a manner that folks, you know, best like to digest it.
And then all your social media contacts are there as well.
It is.
And then even though you mentioned that people don't like talking to lawyers, you have a way they can call you for a free consultation to just kind of, you can help them get the lay of the land a little bit.
Absolutely. My phone number is 404-795-0114. They can call. We'll set up an initial consultation. It's painless, I promise.
And that's thompsonlegacylaw.com. thompsonlegacylaw.com.
Great.
All right. Well, Michelle, I am so glad that we got this set up. I get the sense that there's a lot more to talk about because elder law is another little kind of subset of this that we got to have you come back sometime. Yeah, you'd be up for that?
I definitely would. I think it's very important. Atlanta was just named one of the largest growing senior populations in the country. So I think it's important that people know how to, you know, have access to resources as they age.
All right. Well, it's a date then. We'll make that happen as well. This is, it's been an absolute delight. Thanks so much for coming and hanging out with us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest today, Michelle Thompson, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.